call his wife in. How we doing on this Friday morning? We made it. I know you're just waking up to your Friday, but I'm just finishing it. 1 hour left in our five-hour midnight ride. We made it to the weekend, and we got a doozy of a weekend. Good morning. All these playoff games, I don't know what to do. Unfortunately, the Islanders and the Knicks are scheduled at the exact same time for you Islander fans. Go check the schedule. It sucks. It sucks.
Also, is it typical NHL to release the schedule at 3 a.m. on a Friday morning?
Very bizarre. But hey, we do have playoff games. Islanders, Canes, as we just mentioned, Knicks, and 76ers, and of course, the New York Rangers and the Capitals. As they look to head, and we really haven't talked too much about the Islanders-Cap series yet, as we head in, as the Rangers, should I say, head in as the President's Trophy winner, the number one overall seed. The coach talked a little bit about the struggles or the realization of heading in as the number one seed with the target on your back against the Capitals team that is going to try and be physical, that does have one of the great players in NHL history, and Alex Ovechkin, a team us, you know, Ranger fans are very familiar with playing in the postseason. But a team that the Rangers should dispatch of quickly. And that, for me, is the key to the series. I know that's a weird key to the series. There's a lot of key to the series, which is pretty much what the Rangers do. Rangers got to make sure their special teams stay hot. Got to make sure you score power play goals. You got to make sure that top line is as productive as it's been. You need Panarin to show up, which he hasn't been able to do over the last two playoff series. I feel like this is a different Panarin, and he's been so much more aggressive and so many more shots on goal and so many, you know, 49 goals on the season. He's just been on a different level, and Lafreniere is really starting to emerge as, you know, what you expect the top overall draft pick to be. And of course, Igor. So, I mean, if Igor is going to play like he did 2 years ago and the way he has over the last month or so, a little more than that, after his short time of needing a break after the All-Star game, where he was benched for Quick for a couple of games, and he's kind of got his game together and he's playing as well as he has since that season where he won the Vezina. If he continues to play like that, they continue to be dynamic on the power play. You know what you're going to get out of Kreider in front of the net come playoff time. If they can be a little bit more tight defensively and not having so many giveaways, this team is good enough to win this series without question. They are better than the Capitals. And what I want to see is the opposite of what we always see, which is a seven-game series. The Rangers play six- and seven-game series. It doesn't matter who they play. There is no doubt about it. I mean, we've seen it before. Every year. I remember the first year that the first year with Tortorella in 2012 when they were the one seed as well, I believe, that year, and played the Ottawa Senators in the first round. That went seven. They were even down in the series at one point, I believe. Everything goes seven. Doesn't matter who they play. For once, get through a series quickly, especially a first rounder, move on, and get ready for the next round. These knock-em-out, drag-em-out series, while they're, you know, sharpening, while they get you ready in some aspects, they also tire you down. And too many times, I want to see a quick series against this Washington team that they're clearly better than. And it starts Sunday at 3 o'clock. Knicks start Saturday. And for me, as we got the letter to the fan base from the great Jalen Brunson, who is just, I mean, not only has he emerged as a superstar, but, I mean, the fans have clearly embraced him, and he has embraced them back. And right now, it is a love affair between the city and player, the likes of which we really haven't seen in a long time. We talked about Messier. A lot of those dynasty Yankees clearly had a connection to the fan base. Derek Jeter, obviously. Paul O'Neill, someone mentioned. We were talking about players who weren't homegrown, who came here via either free agency or a trade to so quickly endear themselves to the fan base. And while Randall had it too, to be fair, when he kind of emerged a couple of years ago as an all-star and a star player, it's been obviously an up-and-down tumultuous thing between him and the fans, where Brunson, his father's on the team, he grew up around the team, and, you know, we saw him play college close here in Villanova, seen him win championships, and he came here and the development of being just, when he first came here, a solid player who was going to be their best point guard in a while, because the point guard was an abyss position that just had been awful for the Knicks forever. And you knew he would step in and at least give you some stability at the position. Ultimately, the question was, is he good enough to be a third piece on a championship team? And if not, is it worth giving him the money? That was the conversation. And now we're having a conversation where he's so damn good and so special with the ball and has done such an incredible job down the stretch here carrying this team without Randall, that the question is, are they better without Randall? Is he capable of carrying this team, scoring 40 points a night and taking on Embiid to the point where, is he the best player on the floor against last year's MVP? And right now, the condition of Embiid and what we saw in the play-in game against Miami, I think he is. So not only are the Knicks the better overall team in my mind, not only do they have advantages when it comes to the role players and the amount of shooters they have and the different weapons they have, to me, they also have the best player on the floor, and that would have been unimaginable if you would have said at the beginning of the year they'd be taking on the 76ers in a playoff series. And yet here we are. And there's no excuse. They started out as an early underdog. They are now even, both minus 110. And there is no reason this Knick team, come Saturday, shouldn't take it to Philadelphia and win this series. And for me, it's an enormous, the difference between losing in this series and winning this series, besides the obvious nature of trying to chase a championship, which we, on some level, have kept this dream alive that we thought might have been dead when Randall was officially given the surgery and was not coming back. But we're keeping that championship dream alive. But not only that, this regular season has been so great. And the connection to this team and the fan base has been so special. And the connection of the fan base and this player has been so special, crystallized in that piece he gave to the Players Tribune. It's been so wonderful, so unexpected. Such a great brand of basketball, where they were the best team in the NBA for a month in January, that I need to win this series to stamp this season as significant and as a positive, and hopefully building towards a team that can win a championship if this isn't the team that wins one. But none of that can be done if they lose this series. This will be a disappointing season. This will be a what could have been season. And this season's been too damn good to leave it feeling like that. This is a big series. It's against a rival city. I know a team they haven't played in the playoffs since 89, so maybe not a rivalry between the teams, but clearly a rivalry between cities. A team that's been a popular one inside the NBA, from whether it's the process or Embiid scoring 70 points, all the changes they've made, and James Harden and Doc Rivers, and Ben Simmons. And for me, all of that is just noise. It's about this Knick team. And can they continue to do what they've done all year and shoot and defend and rebound and have Jalen Brunson carry them to victory? And it starts on Saturday, 877-337-6666. Matt in Clifton, what's up, Matt?
T-Mac is in the house. Good morning, sir.
I certainly am. I'm in your house. I'm in your car. I'm all over the place.
I'm getting moist. sorry, that was.
That's okay. We all know the drop. But, we all get to the inside joke. Go ahead.
Before I even pontificate on the Knicks and everything else, you've gotten better. You've grown on me, bro. And by the way, without getting a heart attack, we need more angry T-Mac. Don't get a heart attack, but we need angry Geo Turner is really good. Angry Jerry. We need more angry T-Mac without you obviously getting sick.
What's with the getting sick? Why? I'm not going to drop dead.
A heart attack.
I'm not going to have a heart attack. Do you question anybody else having a heart attack? Cut it out. What are you talking about? I'm in pitch perfect health, you maniac. Give me the nod. Look at you.
Hey, no ditty, but you are sexy. All right.
Well, that's true.
But listen, I was watching some on Instagram and I saw the 1994 Go New York, Go New York, Go, and they modernized it to this year's Knicks, and I was just getting so pumped. I was watching them, and then I go on StubHub, and I'm like, all right, maybe I can go to the game.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe not.
Oh, no, $400 get-in price. I sell Thomas's English muffins and bagels.
Uh-huh.
I was like, dude, I got to sell a lot of bagels and muffins just to get in that door.
I understand. There, so. No, I understand. It's got to be. What the heck was that? What are you doing?
I'm actually working in a supermarket now, so you heard some
I was going to say. That's I know what you're doing. Are you slapping off the little crumbs off the English muffin? I used to do that. And you give it a nice little, get all those crumbs off the bottom. Then you take a fork, not a knife. Don't you dare. You take a fork and you separate that English muffin. You get all those nooks and crannies. You can't be cutting it. Everybody knows that. You never take a knife to an English muffin. Ever. You get that fork in there. You wedge it apart. You keep those nooks and crannies. You toast it. And I hope you're not one of those weird people that prefers the top of the English muffin. Okay? Because we all know the bottom's where it's at. It's got more surface area. It's a little bit more sturdy. You can put a little bit more cream cheese on it. The top's fine. Top's fine. It's got that little bit of puff where it comes out. It's got more of the dough in the middle. But you got the bottom of the English muffin. That's where it's at. That's where you could really put on your butter, your cream cheese, whatever. You can make a Eggs Benedict with the bottom. I'm sure that's Mr. Chef over there who takes pictures of his food has probably made, a couple of Eggs Benedict. Little hollandaise sauce. With the bottom of that English muffin because it's sturdy. It's there for you. The top is nice, but... And plus, if you sometimes you can rip the top, the bottom comes out good all the time.
How do you rank the breakfast breads? If you had to go like bagel, rye, croissant.
Oh, well, the breakfast breads in general?
Yeah. I would think like 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what I'm looking for. Depends on what I'm looking for. If I'm looking for like an egg sandwich, I probably still go like a real good solid bagel. But if I'm just like having toast with an omelet or something, it's definitely rye bread. I'm a rye toast guy. Rye toast the best. There's no question about it. It's got the best consistency when toasted.
As a Jew, I agree, because that's, the pastrami or corned beef sandwich.
Yeah, but it's on soft rye, those pastrami sandwiches.
You can toast it.
Well, if you get the Reuben or something, they'll give it to you on a toasted. But exactly. If you just get, like, if you go to Cat's Deli and just get the pastrami sandwich, that soft rye, which is fine. I like the soft rye, but I'm more of the toasted rye with breakfast. Is where it's at. But yeah, and croissants are okay. I end up never having them. I can't remember the last time I had a croissant. I mean, it's
you're missing out.
I'm sure they're delicious, but most of the time you get the crappy store-bought ones from Costco where it's like 47 of them, and they're okay. They're a little doughy. Very rarely do I go get like a nice crisp crunch fresh out of a bakery croissant. It never happens. Never happens. Daniel and Belrose. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, my brother?
Oh, very, very good. Got my bachelor party tomorrow.
Congratulations. Your bachelor party tomorrow. Where are you going?
Going to Cherry Creek out in Riverhead in Long Island.
Okay.
And getting some whiskey after with a moonshine place. And then go to a restaurant. Going to watch the playoff games with my boys. It's going to be a good time.
Nice. How many guys are heading out there?
Just 5 guys.
Okay. You playing golf or no?
Yeah, playing golf. Yes.
Nice. All right, that's a nice little just for the day. Yeah, you're heading. Definitely. You're staying at a hotel out there. Heading back on Sunday morning.
No, just for the day.
Okay.
We head back.
Oh, okay.
So
all right.
Cool. Let's talk about the Knicks.
Okay, let's talk about the Knicks then. Just go when you know it. Just shout it out.
Yeah. So I want to bring the topic up because you kind of talked on a little bit of how. I think the Knicks are better off without Randle, to be honest with you. I feel like they've been gelling really well. I know he had that freak injury with the shoulder, but there's other times he's been hurt. I honestly think the level of cohesiveness and the way they're playing, I think he just needs to go by next year. I just think he
yeah. Well, listen, I'm okay. Well, let's start with, are they better? Are they better than shoehorning in a somewhat injured Randle at the last minute? Because you mentioned gelling together. Yes. I guess they are better than that scenario if it would have played out that way. Maybe. Are they better today than they would have been if Randle never got hurt? I don't know how you say that. I understand what we've seen with Brunson and how he's emerged since the Randle injury. And now we think of him in more terms of being a superstar, his ability to score 40 points all these games and everything. Like, I understand that. But you might say they're gelling. They are not gelling the way they were gelling in January. That's gelling. What they were in January for that 16 of 19 stretch, that was special. That was dominant. They went through those games like a buzzsaw from the first one against Minnesota all the way through. They were just a buzzsaw. They have not seen, as well as they've played at times, I know they kicked the crap out of Boston. I know they won some big games, and they've won what? They're on a 4 or 5 game winning streak. They never hit the heights to me. They never played the same brand of basketball they played in January. So are they better without an injured forcing back into the lineup, Randle? Yeah, okay. Are they better than they would have been if Randle was healthy? I don't know how you make that case. Other than, yes, on any given night, the idea that Brunson would have to share the superstardom if he's playing well could slow them down on some level. That's fine. I'm open to that. That there's a night where Brunson's just being Brunson and he's able to just go off and score 45, and that's the best way the offense will run through him and the movement, the ball movement, and getting to open shooters better and not having to make sure Randle gets his on some level. Yes, I could see that. But over the course of a series, that's a one-game thing. On any given night, yeah, this might be their best version. But over the course of a 7-game series, over the course of multiple 7-game series, trying to get to an NBA championship, trying to get to an NBA finals, I don't know how you could say that you won't benefit from having that secondary scorer, that guy who can get his own shot, what Randle had become this season. I don't know how you say you're better without him.
That's the question. Are you getting January Randle, or are you getting playoff Randle that you had the last 2 years, and that wasn't good?
No, I understand that, but I mean, still. Okay, let's say you can make the argument you could be better without Randle, because what we've seen of playoff Randle, as you put it. Fine, okay. The ceiling you would need to beat the Celtics and win an NBA championship would have to be the ceiling of January. Like, I don't think this team has I don't want to do this. Can we just focus on this series? I don't want to do this because it's going to get me to say things like, I don't know if they can win an NBA championship, and I don't want to do that because maybe they could. But for me, the best of the best is what we saw in January, and in my mind, I need that to win an NBA Finals. I don't know if this team has that in them, even if, if Randle was terrible, sure, of course. If Randle's awful, then... I mean, you could make a case if DiVincenzo can't hit a shot, they're better off without DiVincenzo. We could play this game all day long. If the player sucks, they'd be better off without him.
That's true. Like you said, does the ceiling change with or without Julius Randle?
Yes, to me it does.
By percentage? What percentage chance do you give them in a series against the Celtics now without him?
I don't want to do this.
Okay, fine.
Less 35-40.
Okay. And what was it with Randle?
The way they were playing, I could 50.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's 35-40 either way.
No, I don't know. I don't know how you could lose a player like Randle and that secondary scorer and someone that you don't have to carry it through Brunson the entire way and tell me that
I don't think they're better without him. I just don't think him not being there changes their ceiling that much.
Okay. I disagree. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night,
bro. Tonight is your night, bro. What's going on?
Yeah, so the kid missed out on Columbo. I feel bad for the kid. But
I don't know how. You got to go back. It's probably on some streaming service. You got to go back and watch Columbo. It's the best. Watching him pester these people to the point they want to rip their hair out, and then they finally get caught just as they thought they were going to outsmart him. It's tremendous. I love Columbo.
It's like it's like the ending of what was it? It's those rotten kids. They always
Scooby Doo.
You always solve the problem.
And I would have got away with it too if it weren't for you mangy kids and your lousy dog or whatever. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So listen, the letter to the fans by Brunson is classy. It's unbelievable, and it's exactly what I want to see from a player that plays and puts.
He gets it, man. He understands, and he understands the connection between this team and that building, and that it's special, and it is special. I understand the Garden throughout its history over the last 20 years of losing has still been a building that's full, and it's filled with the Wall Street crowd or the tourist crowd, and somehow they always manage to fill a building.
Bougie.
No matter, it's the bougie place to be. But this team is different, and the idea that he recognizes what's going on here and how important the connection between this team and him specifically and this fan base, and that he gets that this is unique and special, is awesome to see. And for him to take the time out to write that letter right before the series is about to start, one, it makes me think he's uber confident. The last thing you want to do is write that letter and go get swept by the 76ers. I mean, I feel like he's uber confident with this group, and I also think he just gets it, man. He just gets it.
Yeah, and to that point, I would take that January team with Randall, because I feel like that gives us more options if one player's not hitting.
That's it.
Mix and match up. I agree with you. They were on fire. There was nothing stopping that team. Randall felt comfortable with OG. We'll see how it goes, but I'd love to see that whole team full next year. But we have what we have. Let's go for the run. And then the Yankees, because it is obviously, it's Yankee time right now. It's 4 o'clock. John Heyman has nothing else to do but write that these two guys might be switching places at the end of next year, Alonso and Soto. I mean, does he have nothing else to write?
I didn't even see that. He's switching Alonso and Soto?
Look at it. It's in the Post. It's horrible. He's like, these two guys will be exchanging places next year. Does he have nothing else to do except say, like, Aaron Judge's name wrong? I mean, come on already. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
Let's play the season, right?
Let's play the season. And thank you for the call, Maury. Juan Soto is a Yankee. And that's all I'm focused on. Juan Soto is a Yankee. And right now he's off to an incredible start. And hopefully Judge will join suit. And hopefully Judge, that double down, that it should have been a double, I guess, it hit off the wall, but that single down the line that scored two runs and won the game in Toronto and staved off a four-game losing streak and a sweep at the hands of the fraud Blue Jays, hopefully that will get him going and they can both be what they were meant to be at the same time. But this nonsense about Juan Soto, I don't know why we're so focused on it. I understand it's a one-year thing. It's a rental. They traded for him. Michael King was off to a terrible start. He had a great start. He had a great game his last time. I think he was throwing a no-hitter through seven or something. But I understand they traded for him, and it could be a one-year thing. And he's going to get an incredible amount of money. And, while other clients are dropping him, Boris is hanging. I mean, as Montgomery says goodbye after a miserable offseason, he's holding on. There is no chance in hell. If Juan Soto is anywhere near close to trusting and believing in Scott Boris, and I understand this last offseason, but besides that, why wouldn't you? Like, there is no way Scott Boris is messing around. He is taking this 26-year-old superstar to free agency. We all know it. We all know it. Is there a chance this is his last year? As great as it looks, as much fun as he's having, as well as he's playing, like, is there a chance he goes somewhere else? Yes. Is there a chance Steve Cohen goes nuts with the money? I guess. But why are we talking about it? He's a Yankee right now. Honestly. And the amount of Met fans who think they're trolling me with it every time Juan Soto does something for the Yankees, you guys are pathetic. It's pathetic. It's sad. You guys are, they're 10-8, the Mets. They've got one of the best bullpens in baseball. The rotation that we thought was going to be in shambles, or at least most of us thought, I know all you Met fans knew it was going to be great, is pitching great. They got the best ERA in the National League. Their offense, if not great, has at least shown toughness and resiliency. And even in the games they've lost, they've battled back. You wiped out an 0-5 start, and I'm still getting, oh, Juan Soto's going to be a Yankee. Losers. That's what you are. Losers. Focus on this year's team. You might have one. Don't worry about next year. And I'm, as a Yankee fan, I'm not worried about next year. Juan Soto is a Yankee. That's what I know. And I'm loving every second of it. And watching every single at bat is its own performance. It's literally performing art. But I feel like I've gone to a show and watch someone, I don't know, throw cheese at a wall or whatever. Like, it's unbelievable. Every at-bat is like some sort of, like, it's a battle between him and the pitcher, which, we all understand it is on some level. But, like, he's shaking he's giving it to the pitcher with head nods. He's giving it to the umpire. He's looking back on every pitch. every foul ball, you could see the inner struggle play out on his face. Like, it's incredible. It's just sheer entertainment. I love Aaron Judge, and I love watching him hit. And I loved all those old Yankees. I love watching Derek Jeter at bats. I love watching Stanton at bats because they can give you entertainment, too, with the horrible swings half the time. But there is something about watching a Juan Soto at bat. It is priceless. It's worth the price. It's fantastic to watch. So I'm not concerned about where he's going next year. I'm concerned about winning a championship now. But having said that, he's going nowhere. 877-337-6666. Back with more of your phone calls as we get ready for a playoff weekend. Unless, of course, you're an Islander Knick fan, then you're stuck just picking between which game you're going to watch. That is a brutal. If you haven't seen that, if you're just waking up now, Islander Knick fans, go take a gander at the schedule. It's identical.
I'm sure that's also a reference to something from the 60s.
Yes, no, it's My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
You don't know My Cousin Vinny?
You know that Columbo started? It first aired in 1968.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm glad my parents were toddlers when they got to watch it. My parents were toddlers.
Yes, I understand that. I understand your parents. Yeah, your parents are toddlers. Great, great, great. The show lasted forever.
10 seasons.
It's one of the more famous and influential shows of its kind in history. It's Columbo, man. You think you don't get Columbo, you don't get My Cousin Vinny?
I'm glad you make me feel young, though. I do appreciate that.
You're too young to say you're glad that someone makes you feel young.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, you are. You are. You're too young to be happy to feel young. Wait, what do you think you are? You walk in any room, you feel young. Let's be honest.
In this building, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. I mean, you go anywhere. You go to the supermarket. You're older than you're younger than the produce. 877-337-6666. McMonagle here with you. We'll come back, continue to take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock at the warm-up show right here on The Fan. So, I was thinking about something. As a last caller talked about a bachelor party and playing golf. And I was thinking about something with golf. And I heard someone ask me this years ago, I think. And it was in my head recently because I was watching the Barstool have like the miniature golf Masters, whatever, right around the Masters. They had like a big miniature golf tournament. And I don't know why this jumped in my head, but I thought I would just say it because I was thinking about it yesterday. Could you think, because we always try and think what we're capable of, what we could do, hit foul shots or whatever the case. And obviously putting is something that we all could do. Even if you're a terrible golfer on some level, you think you could play mini golf and putt. Do you think you could win? Do you play golf at all, Rami?
A little bit. Mostly mini golf and top golf.
Okay, mini golf and top golf. This is perfect. Then.
Yeah.
Do you think you could win a tournament, not necessarily the Masters? Could you win a PGA event if you didn't have to use any other club but the putter, and they put the ball on the farthest, like as far as you can get away from the hole on the green? And, everyone else play, like the pros play from the tee box. You just start on the green. All you have to do is putt. Do you think you could compete in that tournament?
No, I'm the more the Bryson DeChambeau of Top Golf, where I could hit it far,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll take it from there. But once it comes to putting, I can't putt at all. I'm a bad example. I'm terrible at miniature golf.
You're terrible at miniature golf?
Yes.
Okay. Terrible at miniature golf?
Yeah.
Just terrible?
Like really bad.
I don't know if I've ever met someone who's awful at mini golf. That's like it's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
Like Top Golf, I could hit it really far and hit all the targets and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to like trying to accurately just put.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, someone mentioned that. And I was watching the mini golf and I was wondering, like, if all you had to do was putt, could you keep up?
Well, that's where the playing field, I guess, is the most, well, pun leveled, right?
Right. I'm just saying, I if you're like an everyman, could an everyman putt his way to keeping up in a PGA Tour event? If all you had to do was putt, could you three putt, four putt every hole?
I think because
the greens. I mean, theoretically, the greens run fast. Obviously, you've never probably most of us, unlike I don't know, Boomer, for example, or other people who've played a lot of these courses. I play the public course where I practically have to take a full swing to send it 10 feet. I don't know why I thought about that. I did. 877-337-6666. I'd like to do that one day. That would be like a bar stool thing. Like, take on a legitimate golfer. All you have to do is putt. Take your worst, an average putter, and just put him on the green for the furthest away from the hole, and then play against, Rahm or whomever, and see if you can, play 9 holes with him.
I'm sure Greg and Jerry can do 4 hours on this at 6 o'clock.
That's it, right? Yeah. They'd be perfect for it. Put Jerry out there on the green against DeChambeau or whomever, Scottie Scheffler, and play 9 holes, and all you have to do is putt. Could you keep up? Teddy in Babylon. What's up, Teddy?
Hey, how's it going? That's an interesting thought. I'm like an 11, 13 handicap, and I don't know. I think a golfer would take me 9 holes. With that,
well, that's what I'm saying. Like, they have to, they have to, play the course normally. All you have to do is putt. But you, like, on some, like, I don't know, a lot of these courses, you could be pretty far away, obviously, from the hole on the green. But the first,
I work on the black.
And
the greens aren't easy. So there's a lot of undulation on the green, speed wise. And you got to take the note that they're probably going to birdie a couple of holes too.
No doubt. You have to. You have to be able to, two or three putt one of the holes eventually. I don't know. But I'm saying, just putting. You don't have to take out your irons. You don't have to hit your driver. Right. They just place the ball as far away on the green from the hole as possible, and then you play against the pro. How would you do?
I think we'll see that on Barstool soon.
Yeah, I think it's a decent idea. I think it's a decent idea.
Before I make my next point, I don't like the notion that the Knicks are better without Randle.
I don't like it either.
You need that second scorer.
Yeah, it feels weird.
Brunson's gonna go to the bench.
Yeah, it feels weird saying it, and I've been discussing it, and I do understand. If you've watched the team since Randle went out, the offense flows a little bit more, and Brunson has become the guy, where Randle was the guy on some of the possessions, and as great as Brunson was, Randle took over a lot. And, this has really established Brunson scoring 40 points, 45 points on a nightly basis. He's been, the ball moves a little bit more. Brunson's better off the ball than Randle is off the ball. So I understand some of that stuff, but ultimately, no, you need that secondary piece. I find it very difficult to say that if Brunson never got hurt, they'd be, they're better off now than if they stayed healthy this whole time. I can't imagine that.
But Randle, the thing is, Randle isn't just a scorer. He's a 22-12 guy. Mm-hmm. You don't just replace that. But my point on the Knicks is I think we need to get out hot on that first game. We got to win that game one. That's kind of like the first tee box.
Look at the golf analogy.
Fairway on that first tee box.
Listen.
The jitters go away. You prove some people wrong. So we have some fight.
Yeah. I think winning game one is important, no doubt. Winning any game at the Garden is going to be important. I don't see this as a group who can't recover from a loss game one, though. I would say I know this is is kind of hedging it a little bit. I would say winning it would be important. I don't think losing it is the death knell. This team has been resilient. They've come back. I don't think it's going to really overwhelm them that they lost game one. Especially if they play poorly. If they lose because they play poorly, if they lose because Embiid looks great and puts up 50, now I'm concerned. And suddenly, you could forget that play-in game. He completely, looked different and he dominated the game. Then I'd be concerned. If the Knicks don't shoot well, Brunson has an off night, and it's just not their night, and they lose a tough game one, I'm not scared necessarily. The series is just getting underway. But if they win game one and they dominate, even though it's a home game, you're right. It would probably breed some confidence. You feel good. You feel like you're justified in being where you are. There are definitely series where I would consider game one a huge. If they go into Boston, game one's enormous.
Remember last year they lost game one at home without Jimmy Butler against the Heat.
Yeah.
That was all right.
That was a killer, right? Yep. Exactly. That was a killer.
Still, we're in that series. I mean, they have
no doubt. But this group is different to me. This group is really resilient. And not that that group, not that last year's team wasn't, but this year's team really feels resilient. And I don't think I would feel like, wow, we just lost game one. How do we do this?
Plus, I think they can win in Philly. They blew out Philly and Philly twice.
There's
and
no doubt.
You talk about fan bases booing. We talked about that earlier in the show. I mean, the Sixers fans were booing for three quarters on Wednesday night.
No, I agree. I don't think Philly is a place they can't win. I don't think a game one loss is something they can't recover from. It's always important. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I'm sure it's upwards of 60-70% of the series are won by the team that wins game one, probably something like that. But ultimately, with this group and the way they play and going against this Philadelphia team and going on the road, none of it scares me. So I don't view like the game one as a really important make-or-break game. I just don't. 877-337-6666. All right, we'll try and get through as many calls. I see you guys on the line. As many calls as possible as we take it rapid-fire style all the way to 5 o'clock at the Warm-Up Show right here on The Fan. Hey, hey. All right, 449. McMonagle with you, 877-337-6666. Let's get to as many calls as we can in the last 10 minutes of our 5-hour midnight ride. Hey, Dan in Lafayette. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Steve?
Hey, Dan. How are you?
Doing?
Good. How are you?
Have a good weekend, too, bud.
Oh, thank you. My weekend's about to start in 10 minutes.
Absolutely.
Let's go.
So I had two things. One real thing on the putting, since you brought that up while I was on hold.
Yes.
Brought back some fond memories when I was a young teenager. I had a buddy who owned a driving range and obviously a little mini golf course, and the the drinking games we used to play there.
Ah, yes.
Oh man, it was amazing.
The drinking games we would play. Santana.
Crazy. He'd bring 18 beers for all the holes, and if someone got a hole in one, you had to chug one. And
sure,
we only made it like the 11th hole.
Yeah, I was unaware of all these customs. I haven't been on a lot of golf outings. I don't play much golf. If I do, there's like a 9-hole par 3 like by my house that I'll try, and I used to with my old schedule go out there and sneak out in the morning real quick and play. But I went on a couple of golf outings, and one of the guys I was with had a hole in one. And I had no idea that, like, you go back into, like, we went with, it was at a buddy's, club or whatever. You got to go into the bar, you ring a bell, you buy everybody drinks. Like, I was unaware that there was, like, a tradition to getting a hole in one. I was unaware of these things.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I want to get to Soto. Two points on him. I like when he's at the plate because he does put on a show. And I noticed something. I wonder why he does it or what it's for. But every time he gets a ball, he steps back and bangs his thigh.
Yes.
I wonder what do you think that's about? And my other point with Soto is I totally agree with you. I'm tired of hearing these people. Well, what if Soto this or Yankees?
Like, when
does if he goes here?
Yeah, ever remember. They've had free agents before. I mean, Judge was a topic, but not while he was hitting 62 home runs. Like, it eventually went on the back burner. Like, eventually we have to stop this nonsense. Soto's a Yankee. This is an important season. The Mets are the Mets. Everyone else is their own season. Why are we talking about this constantly, about where he's going to go? And why do the Met fans think that they have this over? Like, this is, and I don't want to get on all Met fans because, again, it's probably a very small minority of Met fans. But I can just tell you, for me, every time I tweet out, Soto is a Yankee, or Soto play, or whatever, or anything Soto related. Enjoy it while it lasts. He's going to be a Met. Like, it just never ends. And I'm like, well, why you think you have one over the Yankees because your guy spends money, but we don't. Like, it's just so stupid to me. I don't know why we're so hung up on it.
When the Mets fans say, well, wait till we get Soto. Well, I don't have to wait. We have him now. Yeah,
exactly, right. And you don't know what'll happen. But hey, I think he bangs on the hip. It's a reminder to keep I think it's a stance or a swing thing where he bangs on his hip to either remind him not to open up too early or whatever the case may be. I think it's swing related. I think it's like a reinforcement of a habit that he's afraid he'll get either into or out of. Like, so I think, especially because it'll be after a take or something, like he'll remind himself by pounding on his hip, I think. But it could be anything. But you're right, he definitely does. He takes a fist and he bangs it on his right hip with his right hand.
Have a good weekend.
You got it, buddy. Thanks. I don't know what it is, but yes, his at-bats are freaking awesome.
I think it is that it's hang in till the, because you see how also he watches the pitch into the glove.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's keep your, don't pull off.
Yeah, keep your hip in there. Yeah, keep your, that's, I think it's a reinforcement of something. Like keep your hip in the swing. So yes, but he does all, he wears his emotion on his sleeve. It's, I love the idea that he's, you know, I know Sal got on him that he was like happy that he walked. Yeah, I like the idea because he considers it a battle, man. Every at-bat is a freaking war with him, and when he wins, he shows emotion.
And then it worked out for them in that last game.
In that last game, it worked out for them, which, again, I don't want to get not to disagree with Sal or whatever. I don't understand his thought process on it because I heard him today, and I totally disagree with him. I thought the at-bat Soto had the other day when Judge came through with the hit was much more of a case to make on him not leaving the strike zone and looking to do damage than the other at bat. And he came on today and said, oh, this one didn't bother me. The game was already tied. I disagreed. I thought the case was much better. His case against Soto not trying to be the guy was much better the other day than it was 3 days ago, whenever it was. When he came up against the Marlins, they're down 3 runs with 2 men on. He's the tying run. He's got to hit a home run. Like, lacing one down the line does nothing for them. It scores 2 runs. They're still down a run. And now you walk Judge with the base open to pitch to a Jones was at the time. They might have a pinch hitter, but they had taken Stanton out of the game for a pinch runner. You've got an empty spot behind Judge. It made no sense. The walk was as good. The only thing better was the game-tying 3-run home run, which isn't easy to hit. In this case, the other day, he's got the go-ahead run on third base. All he needs is a single. That's a much. I'd much rather see him swing the bat there and do what he does and put bat to ball and lace it the other way and get a base hit as opposed to leaving it up to an ice-cold Judge who had was 0-for-12 in the game, with 0-for-12 in the series with 7 strikeouts. I'd much rather see him leave the strike zone for a single when all I need is a single as opposed to have him leave the strike zone looking for a 3-run home run. But, you know, Sal was like, well, the game was already tied. I disagreed with him. I thought he had a better case the other day. That's where I want to see him leave the strike zone. That's where I want to see him say, I can do this. I can lace a ball over the third baseman's head on an outside pitch instead of taking it.
Plus the 3-2 was the same pitch that got called a strike right. on
it was
the 3-1.
Right, it was right there.
Exact
it was
same
very
spot.
Close.
Yeah.
He doesn't leave the strike zone. Either way, I'm cool with it. I think that's exactly what he should do. I'm just saying Sal's argument that made it, you know, halfway around the world or whatever, everyone loved to talk about it. I thought his argument was much more sound in the situation Soto found himself in the other day against Toronto than the one against Miami. And he feels the opposite. So I just don't understand. I'm all over the, I don't understand what Sal was talking about. Because I thought to leave for a single makes a lot more sense than to chase a ball in the dirt trying to hit a 3-run home run. In that spot, the walk is just as good as anything except the home run, where the other day a base hit gives you the lead, and all you need is a single. I can't ask someone to leave the strike zone searching for a 3-run bomb. Double doesn't help. Triple doesn't help. The only thing that helps is a 3-run home run. I'll take the walk and hopefully have Judge come through. Joel in South Jersey. What's up, Joel?
Hey, Chris. Good morning. How's it going?
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, Sal is just trolling you guys there.
Well, I don't know. I'll be totally honest with you. Yes, is to say that he was looking for a walk is probably much. And the idea that, oh, he's happy to get the walk, yeah, probably too much. But I do think there is a conversation around hitters like Soto, like Bonds, like different players who never leave the strike zone. You would hear it, obviously, before my time. You would hear it about Ted Williams, that they would be frustrated. The Red Sox fans and media would be frustrated by Ted Williams because he had bums hitting behind him and he wouldn't dare leave the strike zone to do any damage. There's a conversation around that on never leaving the strike zone, never trying to put the game on your bat, always being willing to pass the baton. I'm okay with it, especially when Judge is the next guy. But I do think there is a conversation around it. I think maybe Sal misworded it at times with the looking for a walk or whatever. But there is a case and a conversation around Soto when they need a hit Never leaving. I remember this around Ichiro, too. I remember situations where, you know, you're looking for Ichiro to drive a ball. The Mariners' offense isn't that good. There's a man on second, and he's dropping down a bunt because the third baseman's playing deep. And you're like, great, you got an infield single. Now I got to rely on the crap behind you to come through with the game winner. I want you to get the hit. Like, there is a conversation around that. But no, I don't think Soto's looking for a walk.
Right. I wanted to touch on the mini golf thing and just one quick thing about the Mets Yankees Soto thing.
Yeah.
I do feel like I could win a mini golf tournament. Do you feel like you could win one if you were presented the opportunity?
Against other regular golfers, not against real good golfers, no. Against a bunch of schlubs like me, yeah, I think I'm an okay putter. My thought was, if they just put you on the green and you don't have to use anything else, could you compete with a professional golfer who's got to hit his driver, then he's got to hit an iron, then he's got to, you know. I think that would be a fun, as we were watching, like, Barstool have their tournament, and they're incorporating all these other athletes and events and stuff. I thought that would be an interesting thing. Could an everyman compete with a pro if all he had to do is putt? Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Rami on the other side. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Friday. Let's go Knicks, let's go Islanders, let's go Rangers. It should be one hell of a weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday. Sports Radio 101.9 FM. The Man. WFM.